episode 168 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded January 24th, 2018. Supers, Psychos, and Spirits. We're back.
Were we? Yes, we're back. Were we gone?
We were gone for a week.
Oh,
we don't exist when we're not on our podcast.
Oh my God, that's such an existential dilemma you've just given me.
Can you imagine? Like, that's our Black Mirror hell, is that we only get to exist for 1 hour a week.
Wait a minute, are you telling me my family's not real? This got real dark real fast.
I'm imagining that I just appear like Derek in Good Place.
Derek! Do you have wind chimes? You know what? Don't tell me.
Les, turn around. The microphone's facing the other way.
Derek.
Yeah. We are back, folks. And this week we are going to be talking about... we were trying to find a way to link all these shows. And we came up with alliteration. I guess that's the best path.
Sure.
Because this week we're talking about The Wayward Sisters and Black Lightning over on CW. The Assassination of Gianni Versace on FX, and The End of the Fucking World.
End of the Fucking World.
On Netflix.
Yeah.
But before we get into all that, how you guys been? What's
good.
New?
I'm all right. Nothing's new. I don't exist outside this podcast.
This is why we don't do small talk. We have our character backstories that are like, oh, we have families, quote unquote.
I haven't read the news. How fair is the Republic?
You know what? It's good. It's great. Everything's great because nothing exists outside this podcast.
Les brings up another good point about why we don't do small talk. It doesn't end well.
What do you guys think about God?
So, let's just go on. Okay. Lesson learned, guys.
This is how we recommit to television every week. We run through these other topics and go, television.
Back to TV. Hey, folks, if you want to help support us, you can go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a little review. That helps us out. And you can also help us out by going to patreon.com/TVDudes. There you can make a per-episode pledge. Give us a buck or two an episode. In exchange, we do bonus exclusive content that's exclusive just to you guys. And we will talk about... What will we talk about, Randy?
Oh, sometimes we'll pick a popular YA trilogy that we've never seen nor heard and tell you what it's all about.
Like the Maze Runner
series. Like the Maze Runner series.
Last week we played a pretty fun game that one of our listeners, Jonathan Huffnagel, suggested for us.
Yep.
Which was a TV version of Super Fight. So who knows what we have planned this week. We'll figure something out. But we wanted to thank Steven, who is our latest patron. And we want to say thank you so much, dude.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Once again, that's patreon.com/TVDudes. Let's jump over to Facebook. Check out our question posts. Once a week, Randy puts up a little question post. And we got a good amount of questions this week. First one comes to us from Kyle Volte, who says, hey, TV Dudes. Since the adaptation of 80s, 90s movies into TV shows like Hannibal, Limitless, Lethal Weapon, Rush Hour seem to be a growing trend, and the result seems to be about 50-50 for success, what two 80s, 90s movies would you want to see turned into TV shows, and which one would succeed?
So this is a good question, and I'm excited to answer it. But first, I would like to take issue with Kyle's math, because he says Hannibal, Limitless, Lethal Weapon, Rush Hour – that there's a 50-50 success. As far as I know, the only one of those that's still going is Lethal Weapon.
Hannibal got 4 seasons or 3 seasons.
Okay, recall that a success? Okay, that's 50-50. Okay, fair enough.
I mean, 3 seasons is pretty good.
That's true. That's fair. Okay, fair enough.
In British TV, that's a breakout success.
I stand corrected, Kyle. I'm sorry for doubting your math. Anyway, 80s, 90s movies is like my bread and butter. I'm going to go with two, since he said two. Midnight Run. The Robert De Niro.
You are always bringing up
love
movie.
That movie. It's a great movie. If people haven't seen it, they should see that movie.
I've never seen this.
Oh
and
my God!
You think it should be a TV show?
Yes, it should be a TV show. It should be about a down his luck bounty hunter. I want to see what happens after he sort of makes his money. But you could do a thing where you like. You could do the Midnight Run. You could go back in and sort of show him as a cop. You could show a little more of the gangster side of things. You could definitely do a good couple seasons on Midnight Run. And I think that would be really fun and probably would not succeed. And the one that I think would be a smash hit is, of course, White Knights, which is the movie in which Mikhail Baryshnikov and Gregory Hines get trapped behind enemy lines in Russia, and they have to dance their way out. I've only seen the trailer, so I'm approximating, but that's what the show would be about.
Okay. Les, you have any picks?
Yeah, so I honestly, as I kept thinking of 80s movies that could be done and would fail, and then I kept remembering, like, wait, no, I think that had a pilot. Or you know, I think they might have already done that. Ah, crap. Time After Time, the time travel show with H.G. Wells, that was an 80s movie that I would have totally suggested become a TV show, and that was not good.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
That was recent. I'd totally forgotten that existed.
So I think Mac and Me.
Oh, my God.
I think I would throw that out there.
I think they called that Alf.
Yes, and I think it would be an amazing hit. I think it would take off and just spawn a huge franchise.
Man, I'm trying to think of...
You have another one. You got another one, Les.
If I've got to suggest one more.
I was going
to
say, because I could throw some more out there. I had some possibilities.
Go, Randy.
And see, now I'm blanking. I had...
Whoopi Goldberg movie, Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Yes.
Yeah. I also think there should be a Real Genius show, but I'm afraid if you tried to do it now, the conspiracy theory DARPA type stuff would just go off the rails. I don't think you could make a fun show out of it.
I feel like a live-action Ghostbusters TV series would be fun. I think you could get a great cast of four comedians. It doesn't even actually have to be that formula of four people living in a firehouse. I think you can do some spin-off of other people doing ghostbusting from some sort of location.
What if it was like instead of four guys, it was two guys?
Okay.
And instead of a ghostbusting like private operation, it was a government operation. And you get like really funny guys like Adam Scott and Craig Robinson, and you get them to track down ghosts and stuff.
It sounds like it could be good, but I'm going to have that go on the bottom side of the 50-50. I bet it fails.
I think it's still on.
Oh, my God. Is it really?
I don't know. The show I'm making fun of is Ghosted, which is terrible.
And then, let's see. What's my 90s movie going to be? Let's have a Fight Club. Let's have let's see how they rebuild this toxic masculinity manifesting in a bunch of immature men getting out their rage by punching each other and being destructive pieces of shit.
You know, actually, if you did a Fight Club in the same way that they did like Fargo, where they make reference to other movies, if you did a fight, you know, like Fargo referenced Lebowski and all those other things, like all the other Coen brothers. If you did a Fight Club that was a Polanyi sort of anthology in a way.
Or it could be referencing other Fincher works.
Yeah, or not other Fincher work. Like, that'd be interesting.
Zodiac and Panic Room.
I think pretty soon they're going to run out of straight mashups, and we're going to have to start combining like an 80s movie and a 90s movie. So you can do your Fight Club, but we're going to have it be like just one of the guys. And so it's going to be like how a girl 12th Night style infiltrates Project Mayhem.
Okay. I'm down for this. Let's jump ahead to Alec Miracle, who says, dudes, it's time to cash in your man cards. If you are indeed a man, what is the one TV show that has made you cry the most? When I say cry, I also include the lump in the throat, tear-jerking moments, tear down the cheek, and tears with sniffles. I sniffle-cried many times watching The Leftovers, but Lost still holds the record. I mean, come on. It's a tear-worthy show. However, I'm almost done with season 4 of 6 Feet Under. No spoilers, please. And that's catching up as well on the cry list for me.
Well, as we know, Grant, you're a robot.
I've cried once at TV, though.
What was it?
It was 6 Feet Under.
Oh. So
it was that finale.
6 Feet Under was a tearjerker.
Friday Night Lights was the big one that got me constantly.
You cried during it?
Oh, yeah.
The football one?
Friday Night Lights was like super inspirational and touching.
The high school kids playing football?
Yeah.
I'm trying to be condescending about
this. That's the one where I learned that you are a robot, actually, I believe.
There's nothing to cry about there.
Not if you're a robot.
Okay, fair.
I mean, I cried when it turned out that the people were just numbers on the island. But that, I don't think, was tied to the emotional beat.
Let's get out of this room right now.
I cry a lot when Big Bang Theory comes on. Does that count?
I don't know, not on total frequency. Like, I didn't cry, I wouldn't say most across the show, because Halt and Catch Fire ran 4 seasons, and I didn't cry in any of the seasons prior to the last one. But the final season of Halt and Catch Fire just wrecked me. They have they have something happen probably 4 or 5 episodes prior to the end that, and the ramifications of it are felt for all the remaining episodes. And
Godzilla shows up.
Say what?
Godzilla shows up.
Yes, yes, Godzilla. Actually, that's the next. They were going to go that next season, you know, into post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
They've had a sick character for several seasons, and shit comes to a head in the last season. Show's wrapping up, and
I bet that person
it was
dies.
A gut punch. I was amazed how well it was handled and how much it kept hitting me.
Jonathan Huffnagel says, "Good evening, TV dudes.
Good evening."
I just binged Marvelous Miss Maisel, brilliant, but now I find myself hungry for more. While a few shows have returned, I feel like it would be a few months before some truly worthy television will appear and demand my attention. Weekly, I am watching Star Trek, Magicians, Good Place. However, I can't find much else to pass my time with. I watched the pilot for American Crime Story, but the pace of the show will probably bug me unless I want to wait to binge it all at once. Are there any good series that may have slipped by that you could recommend? I listened back to the best of 2017 and took a peek at some of those, too. Any other suggestions?
There's a little show called Terriers.
Randy, you are one note with this.
Yeah, I've got a thing called Middleman.
Oh, my gosh. You both are just one note with this stuff. Yeah, well, we are talking about a show this week, The End of the Fucking World, is 8 episodes, each episode's 30 minutes, and I cannot recommend this enough.
Well worth your time.
Binge show.
We'll get into that, but well worth your time.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
It's pretty fantastic.
I was going to say, this is kind of what we do every week, Jonathan. I mean, we give you shows to listen to. I feel like you're not listening right.
Have you seen Future Man?
Have you seen Future Man? For sure.
I was going to say, though, that I did make a list of some other binge-worthy shows just because I was asked this on one of my stay-at-home dad forums I'm on.
I thought you were going to tell us you were on another podcast.
I'm not on another podcast. But here's my list, and I'll run through it really quickly.
Okay, go.
On Netflix, I recommend Breaking Bad, Mad Men, It's Always Sunny, which I heard actually is just been taken off. Yeah, to Hulu. The Office, Stranger Things, Park and Rec, Ozark, Arrested Development, The West Wing, Luther, Sherlock, Master of None, The Good Place, Better Call Saul. Over on Amazon, I'd say The Marvelous Miss Maisel, Mr. Robot, Battlestar Galactica, Catastrophe, Justified, Deadwood, Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Americans, The Wire, 6 Feet Under, Veep, Sopranos, 24, Hannibal. On Hulu, Rick and Morty, Future Man, Adventure Time, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Community, The Mick, Lost, and The Handmaid's Tale are all fantastic binge shows.
That's going to take you a while to get through. That should come back to us in a few weeks.
I would say on Hulu, the two sitcoms that slipped my radar that I've binged through that were great, I've seen quite a bit of Superstore and quite a bit of Great News, both of which are wonderful. Great News sits directly between News Radio and 30 Rock.
It really does. I'm behind on it, but every time I binge it, I enjoy it.
Is that one I really didn't like?
That's one you hated, yeah.
I don't think I made it through a full episode.
I know. You got to give it more of a chance. It grows on you. It's a slow burn.
Okay.
It's a thinker.
Eventually, you get to see Tina Fey play a female Jack Donaghy, basically.
Yeah.
Benjamin Hamill says, take some of your favorite Let's hold off on this one for the last
question.
Let's close
with this one. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Jonathan Haptemichael says, hi, dudes. Many shows these days run long with their per-season episode counts. I know people want as many episodes to tell the story, but even 10 episodes can still drag with poor pacing. What arbitrary episode count/length rules would you place on networks and streaming platforms to minimize storytelling issues?
8.
8?
Yeah, I feel like it's at least in a 40-minute drama, so hour-long drama for network television with commercials, 42 to 48 minutes, I think, is what most of those end up averaging when you see them on Netflix.
Yeah.
I would say 8 episodes of that. I mean, granted, that didn't work in Defenders, but 8 episodes seems to pare it down enough for me that they streamline the pacing on most of those shows. Then I watched Into the Fucking World, and it's 30-minute episodes, and only 8. Is it 8?
Yeah.
It's 8.
And that is so beautifully structured.
I watched all of it today.
It's beautiful. I feel like 8 seems to be the magic number on it. You go past that, I almost guarantee you have included one full episode I don't give a shit about.
I'm going to counter argue because I feel like Star Trek Discovery, if they've done 8, I would have felt cheated. And they're going to do 15.
But to be fair, they did 9, they took a break, and then they're doing the final 6.
So you're saying this could be 2 seasons.
Well, they also call it Chapter 1 and Chapter 2.
It broke its momentum for me when they took that break.
Yeah, okay. All right, okay. That's fair.
Wish they had not. But
oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it, not for storytelling reasons. It just, it, it broke the show's momentum a little too early for me.
I have another counter proposal. iZombie does well with its 20-something episode count.
Yes.
It's the exception that proves the rule. But I do feel like – I feel like 8 is cutting things too close. I feel like 10 is a good number, and that some people – it doesn't matter how many. If you give them 6, you give them 20, they're going to fuck up. It's not necessarily the episode count. I think 10 is a good baseline.
24 had 24 episodes those first two seasons.
And it was good when they did a 12-episode return.
Yeah, it was good in those first two seasons too.
24 season 1 had the amnesia subplot. 24 season 2 had the cougar subplot.
They're going to get it down to a 24 episode. I mean, a 24 minute long episode that's going to be like a seizure.
Yeah.
And it'll be amazing. It'll be Blipverts. It'll be the best 30 minutes of television we've ever seen. They'll still run ads during it.
Yeah. The Breaking Bad, the inevitable Breaking Bad Netflix revival will be a 32 minute that is jammed right into your head.
Speaking of jamming things, our last question comes to us from Benjamin Hamill. I started reading this. I decided this has to go at the end. He says, take some of your favorite TV shows and turn the title into softcore porn versions. For example, Bonafide, Hardwood, Parks and Rec That Ass.
That was my favorite.
Now, I know you guys actually planned some out. What do you got?
I actually haven't. I'm just looking at my list of best of for last year.
I know Grant's favorite show, Lust.
Oh. Instead of it going boom, it goes, ooh.
or it's got the high-pitched female voice. That's really bad. How about
never do that again.
I will not. How about Masturbator of None?
Oh. That's sad.
That's sad. Some of these just work. Star Trek Discovery and Glow could both just be softcore porn titles.
Perfect Strangers. Growing Pains. No.
The Stranger Things.
It's Always Horny in Philadelphia.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just looking at my list of things.
The Orifice.
Oh, God. Rick and Morty, and also Jake. And
Rick and Morty and Bob and Carol and Al.
Yeah. I was turning into gay porn. Les turned into like a 70s movie.
It could just be Dick and Morty.
Dick and Morty.
All right. I think we'll end there.
Thank God.
So we got some news this week. This is weird.
Okay.
Candace Bergen is returning for a Murphy Brown revival series at CBS.
She's still alive?
That was my reaction as well.
The original creator as well is returning, right? Diane, I can't think of her name.
Yes, maybe. I've never seen an episode of Murphy Brown.
Really?
No.
Potato?
Potato.
She took on the political establishment.
Yes, back when things would get you thrown out of politics.
Yeah, Diane English, by the way, is the original creator. I never saw an episode. I saw a reference to it on a Seinfeld episode. And I, of course, knew all the various pop culture things where like, yeah, the single mother stuff that Dan Quayle got all mad at her about. And
yeah, yeah.
But so it's going to return 30 years later to a world of cable news, social media, fake news, and a very different political and cultural climate. This is not the worst idea.
I'm kind of liking such a groundbreaking women in news show.
Yeah.
Entering into this particular time in news where the landscape of news is such its own story right now.
I forgot that Dan Quayle got angry at her because it was a single mother raising a kid's show.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now we have a president who's a rapist.
Yep.
Yeah, and also paid $130,000 to a porn star to hide their affair.
Yes.
But nothing matters anymore.
Yeah.
Nope, SNL did that sketch.
Yeah. And also coming back, Party of Five reboot at Freeform.
Yeah.
Why?
This one, that one gets a why for me. I'm sorry. I feel like Murphy Brown is the light rising to combat the dark of like Roseanne's crazy Trump voting, whatever she's about to do.
That makes sense.
This, I just don't get. Like, don't do this.
Well, Matthew Fox never really went on to do anything.
Right.
Else.
It's true. That
so
is true.
He needs this. And Scott Wolf.
What's to say? What's the Scott? Yeah, the Scott Wolf. He was in Go. That's the other thing he did.
Yes. It's a reboot. So it's going to be. The new version will have an immigration twist, which, by the way, weird dance, the immigration twist. and it's going to focus on a first generation Latino family. I don't know if maybe instead of their parents dying, they're going to like their parents get deported.
Is it called Fiesta de Cinco?
I'm saying, man, because Party of Cinco is not going to work out. This is not a good idea. I don't think.
I don't.
Why do they call these things reboots? Just do a different show. Like you want to do a show about immigration issues and that show needs to get done.
Sure.
It seems weird. I don't know.
Marketing tie-in.
Oh, that's exactly. You're right.
Name recognition will just sell something, and it's
little voice in the back of my brain went built an audience. Shut up. Yeah
it's so annoying that they do it, but they do it.
Speaking of, the Mighty Ducks is getting a TV show.
I was just looking back on that. I was like, oh, man. Okay, so we got Foggy Nelson from the Mighty Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
We got Charlie – what's his name? Not Charlie Pace. That might have been the character's name.
I have seen as much Mighty Ducks as I have seen
Joshua
Murphy
Jackson,
Brown.
Fringe dude.
Oh, that's okay. Right.
He was Pacey. In there? Yeah. Marguerite lady, that's the girlfriend in Wet Hot American Summer.
You're too deep into duck lore for me now.
Okay.
Mighty Ducks is the one where there was a single mom and the vice president got mad at them, right?
You're close.
Okay.
You're close.
Okay.
Emilio Estevez was in this.
Was he a single mom?
No. You were not close at all.
It's where he and his brother are garbage men.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. That's so good.
And then he starts robbing banks.
He started an 80s band.
They drank Jägermeister all through that movie. And that's so weird. It was like 5 or 10 years before Jägermeister was really in bars everywhere.
Oh, gross.
So let me put this to you guys. Would you think there'd be more of a reason for a Mighty Ducks TV series or a Men at Work TV series?
Mighty Ducks.
Okay, fair enough.
Mighty Ducks, yeah. Okay. I think that's this could be the new Friday Night Lights.
I might cry my way through kids playing hockey.
You're just going to cry so much.
I don't think that's going to happen.
So hear me out. We could do a Men at Work TV series, which would just be like two guys who are garbage men that are kind of half-assed detectives and solve stuff, and we'll call it a Terriers revival.
There you go.
I was thinking we could just start announcing revivals and then twist the shows to unrecognizable degrees, like whatever show you actually want to do, and then we'll just pick a random show like, oh, no, it's a reboot of ALF.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that probably is what's being done. They're pitching a show, and they're like – yeah, that's great, but could it be about kids playing hockey?
You think it's a party game? Do they pass a hat around and you draw a random show and like you suddenly have to rework your pitch in 5 minutes? Like, let's see if Smith can do it.
Now, would this be like wacky ragtag like team forms and then like kind of wins the day? Or would they try and take a little bit more of a serious approach to like forming a team out of like the poor kids on the poor side of the block and like making something of it?
I would bet more sitcom approach. We don't really know a lot about it, but I would think sitcom approach, and it is probably going to be like all these, you know, they can't just make the arc of them like becoming the team and then winning because that's one season.
Now we need Jason Katims to come in here and really turn this thing around.
Yeah. To me, they need to do to get the spirit of the movie, they need to do the arc of forming the team. Like they need to do a full season putting the team together and then a full season of them winning, you know.
Yeah, a full season of putting the team together. One new person each episode.
Yes. Focusing once on recruiting each kid slowly.
What if it starts with them winning and then every episode is a flashback to each kid pitch style? We have the whole pitch wish sound effect. So
that went so well.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Every time it goes back in time, it goes, oh.
See if only Pitch had been a reboot.
Yes. Pitch was a reboot. It was a gender-flipped reboot of Major League.
Hey.
Here you go, marketing and known.
Randy, I would like to point out there's one more story there.
I don't think there is. I think we're done. I think there's no more news this week.
One more story.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you need me to read this?
All right, look. I made an ill-advised pledge.
Yeah?
That in my hubris, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in my certainty that The Inhumans was definitely going to be canceled. And I said that if it wasn't canceled, I would watch every episode.
And review it for us on here.
Yes, I did say that. But I was very certain it was going to get canceled. And then it was started like maybe it wasn't officially canceled. In fact, Grant seemed to find every single story about how it wasn't officially canceled.
Listeners, I would also like to point out that off mic, Randy said, I'm not actually going to watch it. I'm just going to pretend and I'm going to make it up. We're going to make him watch it, yes. If this actually gets renewed. He Clockwork has to Orange actually style. Watch this.
So I sent Grant a message about 2 days ago with a link to a story that seemed to indicate pretty strongly that Marvel had unofficially or quietly canceled The Inhumans. And I was mm-hmm. like, I dodged a bullet. Grant has responded with a story from Screen Rant titled, Marvel fans launch petition for ABC to renew Inhumans.
I have many issues with this story. A, I take issue with them being Marvel fans.
Yes.
I don't think they are.
Nope. No. They're Russian bots.
They're Russian bots. Well, that was my first thought because I really couldn't figure out it. I mean, Marvel not renewing it still makes sense.
Yeah.
The story there is that fans want it back, and I don't think that's possibly true.
Please do me making more Inhumans.
I think fans want Randy to have to watch Inhumans. Yeah. I think we put a petition together. That's what that's about.
TV Dudes fans launch petition for ABC to renew
to make
Inhumans.
Randy watch Inhumans.
Do you guys think all the TV Dudes fans hate me?
They don't even have to air it. I think we'd be cool with ABC just sending you the tapes.
What? No, I'd rather them send me – they can send me SARS in the mail. I'd rather get that
and
than
I
Inhumans.
Said tapes. I think Inhumans. Arrives on tapes.
Oh, for sure.
I think you have to go find a VCR.
And, no, not a VCR. It's reel-to-reel tapes.
It's a laser disc. I make you go find the thing.
It's actually microfiche.
So first up, we're going to be discussing the CW shows, The Wayward Sisters, which was a backdoor pilot, and then Black Lightning, which just debuted its pilot. Then we're going to talk about FX's The Assassination of Gianni Versace, which is the second season of American Crime Story over on FX, and also the pilot. And then we're going to talk about Netflix's The End of the Fucking World. We're going to talk about the full season, so there may be spoilers in there for you guys. But first off, let's jump ahead to the CW and this new show, The Wayward Sisters.
Well, it's not been greenlit, and Supernatural has tried this once before. They did tried to do kind of a backdoor pilot 2 or 3 seasons ago, Blood Brothers, or I can't remember what they were trying to title it, and it was going to be like a spinoff clan of family in, I think, Chicago that were It was a little too similar to Supernatural, I felt, and it didn't get picked up. This is basically every female character that they've left in their wake across 13 seasons of Supernatural. Mm-hmm. I already feel like I think I'm one of the few people that's maybe actually caught up on this show. I feel like Supernatural is this weird challenge of television writing at this point. It's 13 seasons in, and I just watch it with this like popcorn eating. How are you guys going to keep making new stories out of this?
Well, they're
going to
add Scooby-Doo. That's not a joke.
Yeah, they're going to Scrappy-Doo this. Yeah.
They're, no, they're actually doing a Scooby-Doo episode this season.
Oh, that makes total sense. Yeah. So this season, they're in a parallel world thing, is kind of the big overarching thing that's happening. And so they have an episode where the Dean and Sam are lost in another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And it leaves this kind of gap episode for someone else to fill in. And you end up with Sheriff Jody, who is a cool recurring character on Supernatural, and Claire Novak, who is played by Catherine Newton, who is a girl that the brothers had rescued. She's this super tough girl. She's gotten herself into trouble going off and hunting on her own because at this point she knows all this shit's real. And then you've got another sheriff that they've kind of left in their wake after a bunch of monsters in their town kind of revealed that all of this is real. Sheriff Donna Hanscom.
I love her.
Played by Brianna Buckmaster. And then you've got a psychic named Patience, So Patience and Claire Novak, their characters are roughly the same age. Jody and the other sheriff are roughly the same age. And in this episode, they basically all come together to go rescue Sam and Dean from the other dimension. So you get this kind of one episode bottle story where they have to put this team together, but it ends up being every female on a show that kind of has a reputation for being two brothers, always tough guy, and anytime a woman shows up on Supernatural, she usually gets killed or gets her life just leveled. And so Supernatural's kind of had a rep for mishandling female characters for years. It's really interesting to me that their backdoor pilot that looks like it might work is taking all of their female characters and putting them into a show, and it's really fun. I like these characters. It gives Claire is often too cynical of a teen and just kind of slides into that too easily. The other characters help bring her back. One of the sheriffs is this Fargo accent.
She's amazing. I love that character.
Yeah, so she's just the chipper, you know, like clear the shotgun, shoot a monster, you betcha. And then Jody's this tough as nails. It just made for a cool thing. I really hope it gets picked up.
Yeah, I have not watched Supernatural since season 5, so I don't think I knew any of these characters. And that's like their what has gone before was like gobbledygook to me. I was watching it and I'm like, I hope not expect to retain any of that because I have no idea what it was. And in fact, this was a really good sort of standalone episode. Like I didn't need to know anything about Supernatural other than the basic premise that I knew from watching a couple episodes. And it introduces you all these characters that were really liked, and it gives them they all have a different reason for being there. They all have a different mode of operation. There's some good sort of character conflicts about one of them sort of being a surrogate mom to this girl who does not want to be protected. And the bad guys who are just sort of extra-dimensional monsters were really cool looking.
Yeah, I really like the monster design on it. They've kind of got this rag shamble zombie monster thing going on with like glowing red eyes. It was super creepy.
Yeah, and then when you undo their mask, their ugly fleshy things. Mm-hmm. Also, there was a kaiju.
I mean, that's sort right. Of. Yes, there's like a basically like a giant version of one of them.
Yeah.
Comes up over the horizon.
That was a cool thing because I don't know if they've done any of that in Supernatural. I thought that was cool.
They've not, but through the episode where in the place where Sam and Dean are lost, every once in a while they keep running past these skulls that are like comically ridiculously large.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a huge toothy skull of something that's like bigger than 10 or 12 trees.
Yeah, I like the idea of them facing a cult that like wants to bring giant monsters into the world instead of just like demons. I like that.
Well, the parallel world that they're in is kind of interesting to me. Supernatural at this point's already introduced the entire cosmology of Christianity, like mm-hmm. heaven and hell and God and all of that. They land in this parallel world and come to find out all of that cosmology is also here. Completely duplicated, only it's gone differently. And Lucifer's dead. The Archangel Michael is not a great guy and is running things with sword drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this just dystopian hellscape run by angels. But it's just the implication of them finding a parallel world where there's a second Christian cosmology cracks me up. Like mm-hmm. Supernatural is an already off the rails show. And then this just takes it way, way further.
Yeah. I did not think, I should catch up on 8 more seasons of Supernatural, but I did think, if they do a Wayward Sisters show, I'd watch it.
And see, if they'd only been 8 episode seasons, I could get people to catch up on Supernatural.
That's true.
So jumping over to this other new superhero show, Black Lightning, this was the show that we saw an early trailer for, but the trailer was for sort of a plot that it was just cut for a trailer as like a proof of concept.
Yeah.
So they went back in once this was picked up and like recast and like, or not recast, but they cast out the rest of it and developed a plot that's a little bit different. We have Cress Williams playing Jefferson Pierce, aka Black Lightning, who is a retired superhero who is now the principal of Garfield High School, and he is trying to hold things together and has his two daughters that he's taking care of himself while he's separated or divorced from his wife.
No, they seem divorced.
I think they're divorced.
Yeah. He still wants her back, but I think the paperwork's done.
And he hung up his spurs. He's trying to do good for the community, kind of like Mayor Hundred or something. And
yeah, and
Ex Machina. Yeah, yeah. Ex Machina. Mm-hmm. And his daughters are Thunder and Lightning. Their names are Anissa and what's the other one? Lynn, I guess.
Yeah,
but.
And they don't fully have their powers just yet.
Or Jennifer. Yeah, Anissa and Jennifer. But, they're going to be end up being Thunder and Lightning. Yeah. They're his little proteges.
Yeah, and one of them is like a teenager, and the other one is like in her early 20s, right?
Yeah, the other one is a teacher actually at the school, which caught me off guard at first.
Well,
yeah.
Part-time teacher, but she's like a scientist. I think she's like made it in the world. And she's a doctor. Oh. And she comes back to teach like health or something for like 2 days a week or something because her dad's there.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, that she's actually has a job outside. That when they're introducing her in the early like awards ceremony part, they mentioned that she's like I think she's a doctor. She might be a nurse, but at any rate, she has a medical job outside of the school.
I was pretty impressed with this. I think I was geared up to not enjoy this. I was thinking this is just going to be another one of those hokey shows, and the level of maturity, the approach to this, the believability of like how this guy is like just trying to hold together his family and he actually has a good relationship with them. Like the chemistry of the whole family is fantastic.
Really good. Yeah.
But like their foe is this gang, and then behind them is this the whale. What's
Tobias
name?
Whale.
Tobias Whale.
That's a classic Black Lightning villain, yeah.
And just having them as villains, I think, was a great way to kind of pull him back in when his daughters are threatened.
Yeah.
Like, and he's violent. he actually, like, kills people,
This does not feel like a CW show. It feels like – and it also, importantly, does not feel like a Marvel Netflix show because things happen in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think they managed to walk that line of, like, not quite Bronze Age goofy that even I find a little grating on the CW, but not so dire and – lacking in any kind of fun or action as the Netflix shows often are. Like the action sequences of Black Lightning are really, really good. And then the character stuff is really believable. It's not soapy.
There was some heavy handedness in some of the messaging. And I was like, I'm like, okay, I get it. But then I'm like, no, you really want to like underline it a couple times and make an exclamation point.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's poignant commentary that you can make. There's also some musical cues that I thought, like had me rolling my eyes. But otherwise, those are kind of my only complaints.
Yeah, and even for the musical cues that I felt were a little hokey, I had to give props for CW spending money on their music licensing. There's quite a bit of Al Green.
Yeah, there's also some great music.
I read a thing just the other day where somebody was talking about the difference between seeing like an ABC sitcom Halloween episode or a CW sitcom Halloween episode, and it's the difference between seeing somebody dressed up as like Minions or whatever, or as a Disney or a Disney princesses, or seeing somebody dressed up as a robot or knight, and like you can't license this, can you? So I was really impressed when it was music I knew and not like new band that you guys got. I thought the music cues were a little heavy-handed, but really well done. They showed some money behind the show, which to me felt like a little bit of showing network commitment behind the show.
I was confused a little bit by how his powers work when he's holding someone up with lightning, but not burning them to death. Well,
he did kind of burn the kid, but I was wondering that too. What is he holding them by?
Yeah, that was bad.
He also shot him into a car. I'm like, well, that guy's dead. But then he starts moving around. I'm like, no, he should be dead. He should be 100% fully dead. And it's okay if you killed him. He was not a good person. who was holding a gun to your daughter's head.
They do seem to have some issues with the powers. Like that particular scene, I was like, I don't know what you guys are doing. This is not anything that he's ever been able to do. Yeah. I think it was kind of like, in Superman 2, when he like takes his S shield off and throws it at the bad guys and wraps them up.
Yeah, that's not a...
It was some producer who was like, well, what if he did this? And that producer was so high up that nobody could tell him that's never
happened.
Well,
yeah, it would look really cool if he held him above the ground. Like, oh, God, all right.
Yeah, it's...
did kind of look cool.
Yeah, it doesn't make any...
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. He's not telekinetic.
For my part, there's a couple of things about the story that I wish had been lined out a little more linearly or a little more clearly. I wish they had tracked like the use of his powers a little more clearly. Mm-hmm. I also watched these episodes having to pause them and go do things in the middle, and so it felt a little disjointed to me because of that. Mostly, though, I wish they had dropped both 1 and 2 at once.
Yeah.
I feel like to get you into the world of this show, because it isn't set in the Flash Arrowverse, it doesn't quite feel like the other CW shows. I feel like they should have dropped 1 and 2, because having seen episode 2 now, it completes the other side of him coming back.
So what it's going to look like, because we didn't get to see what the show's going to
look
like.
At the end of episode 1, he's come back as Black Lightning, but he's still adamantly telling his ex, Black Lightning's not back.
Yeah,
and he came back to save his daughters. That's it. So in episode 2, the community asks him, they don't ask him, but the community is trying to protect their own kids, and somebody gets hurt.
Yeah.
And he realizes, if I had still been Black Lightning, so by the end of episode 2, he's stepped back into it for someone else, and he has to outright tell his ex, this is different. They also, in episode 2, they bring in this weird concept that his ex-wife accuses him of, you're just addicted again. That's the addiction talking. Hmm. And he looks at her and goes, I was never addicted to my powers. And you can tell that this has been her terminology on this, is that you're addicted to using your powers, which is a weird guilt twist to it to me. Like that's a loaded thing to lay in there.
Yeah.
I like that. I thought though, in the first episode, he does say like he used his powers and he's like, hey, I had to do this for them, but this isn't over. Still more I'm going to have to take care of with this.
Yeah.
And I thought the implication there was I still have to do this under the guise of Black Lightning.
Yeah, he backs it back off. It gets a little annoying to me that he backs it back off to her, and but they don't run it out too long. By the end of episode 2, and if they pull the rug out from under me again, I might start to get annoyed with this, but it seems like he's fully back. I wish they had done episodes 1 and 2 in a block together.
By the way, James Remar as Paul Gamby, it's great. Great.
Peter Gamby?
Yeah. Is it Peter Gamby? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that character. I thought that was a good choice, too.
Is Peter Gamby like part of the broader Marvel universe, too?
The DC universe.
Or DC universe, rather, as like a costume maker?
No, not really. He is just a Black Lightning guy, because I was thinking he might be that, too. But no, he's just sort of a Black Lightning guy.
This is, I'm sure, asked and answered somewhere else, but why are we still calling him Black Lightning?
Because what's a better name?
Lightning.
No, it's not.
His lightning's blue.
Yeah, but lightning doesn't.
So why are we calling him Black Lightning?
Because he's black, man. Yeah. I think in this particular case, because this character was such an early, in the same way we're still calling Black Panther Black Panther. I mean, obviously he's a black character. He's a Black Panther.
Mm-hmm. But that cat's actually black.
Yeah. I think the reasoning here is that these two characters were so important that they were African-American characters. Like they were some of the first African-American characters who really were put into the universe to diversify it, that to change the name feels almost disrespectful to legacy, even though the name is somewhat dated.
That makes sense to me. Setting the show in 2017 and or 2018 and having him come back, I feel like somebody would mention it. Some should mention it to him at some point.
I would be surprised if they don't make reference at some point where they don't say, isn't that name a little dated or something?
I'm just surprised 2 episodes in that they nobody's gone yet. Dad. Well, I mean, they did call his costume some Parliament Funkadelic looking shit, but
I mean, Black Lightning, it's addressing issues in the black culture, and the name's kind of cool.
Cool. It's a cool name. That's,
I mean, it's like
thing.
Black Dynamite or something. Like, I get it. I really want them to acknowledge it, because I don't feel like the motives behind it were entirely that altruistic when it was started.
Yeah, well, Lawrence,
when the character was first brought out.
Actually, I don't know if that's true. Tony Isabella, who created the character, was very deliberately trying to. He was. I mean, that's the reason that Jefferson Pierce was a social was like a social worker, was a principal, was a teacher, all those kind of things. Like, he wanted to present a different look at the African-American experience in comics because it was not being shown. And I do think he was deliberately trying to create that. Now, you can argue that the use of like Black Lightning was when ham-fisted, but I think the intent was always to be kind of what it is now. You will notice that Lawrence Fishburne is not being called Black Goliath in Ant-Man and Wasp. He's just being called Goliath. So it's not that the name can't be – not that things can't be dated.
Lawrence Fishburne's going to be in it?
Yeah.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's playing Bill Foster, a.k.a. Goliath, which is pretty awesome. So it's not that they can't find – not that some of those names aren't really badly dated, but I think Black Lightning it kind of sounds cool. I think that's where it mostly comes from. You're right, though, that they should address it at some point. Someone should make a comment about it.
I also, even though I didn't like the suit, his new suit in the promo when they ran that cut together trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then in the first episode, they show a little flashback of him in the 70s. And I liked his 70 or whatever, 80, whenever he was.
Yeah.
And I liked his previous suit better. And then they put him in the new suit. It
feels all bubbly.
It kind of grew on me as a tactical armor thing of like, hey, man, you are going to get killed.
Yeah, I like it, too, for that reason.
So I kind of – it won me over on that. But it still bothers me that in the sketches he was shown, the lightning bolts are crisp and have corners. And then in his, it looks like marshmallow in like a zigzag. It looks like you iced your toaster strudel on the front of Black Lightning. and it drives me nuts. Like, I know you could make those sharper edged. In episode two, they get a little more into this. There's something going on with his powers, or I really want him to get into what's happening with his powers. He gets hurt at one point in episode two and clenches his fist, and you see the electricity run up his veins and through, and it's a really neat effect. I was pretty impressed with how nicely handled it was. And so I'm really wondering if there is something where the root of his power is, or where does he – I want him to get more into how his powers work or what's going on there.
And we see his daughter break a sink, at least in the first episode.
We see her do another thing in episode two as well.
So obviously it's genetic and it can be passed down. So I'm interested to see how it manifests differently in each of them. I'm guessing one has lightning and the other can do something sound waves.
I feel like in the comics, one of them was super strong and tough, and I think that was Thunder. And is the other one called Lightning? Mm-hmm. Just called Lightning? Weirdly, I don't think she has lightning powers. I don't remember what they were. These are later. These characters were created in the 90s by Jeb Winnick.
Okay.
And actually, Isabella, who's the creator of Black Lightning and has always been very protective of that, was not happy about these creations because, to him, having Black Lightning be like a divorced, deadbeat dad, he really did not like the idea that this guy had adult children that he had not been with his whole life. And I think he must have gotten okay with it because he signed off on the show.
Well, how they treated in the show.
The way they handle in the show is great.
Yeah.
He's the dad who's like really caring for him.
He's friggin' super dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they really have I was going to say respect, although the one daughter kind of is doing her thing.
She's still precocious, but.
Yeah, but they still have like a deep affection for him as well.
But yeah, he gave up, wearing a cape and superheroing to be this, superhero for his kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just love his interactions with his students too, how it all plays out.
Yeah, the guy that got me, the guy playing Jefferson Pierce, what's his name? Cress?
Yeah.
I remember him from Sports Night.
Cress Williams,
yeah. He was on Sports Night. He was the sportscaster who was obsessed with his girlfriend Felicia.
He was the dad of Michael B. Jordan in season 4 of Friday Night Lights.
Oh, wow. I'd forgotten that.
He was the other version, the deadbeat dad.
Yeah, that's right.
He was great
in that role.
He was trying to hustle and capitalize off of Michael B. Jordan, Vince's rising star.
Well, he's great here because he really does bring that, you believe this is a guy that everyone in the school respect. Like, when he's walking through the whole hall of the sky high school and he keeps, talking to as he's talking to whoever he's talking to, he keeps having an aside to the student, get that science project done or whatever. You feel like this is a guy who's on top of everything, who's well liked among students and faculty alike. And he even has that relationship with the gang leader where there's a mutual respect going on, even if it gets a little dicey.
He's got this kind of tall, lanky, and really mellow demeanor about him that it's impressive, both here and when I remember him on Friday Night Lights, when he's able to just kind of switch to an aggressive mode that you're like, whoa, how is that just laying within you?
Yeah,
I felt that too. Yeah, he seems kind and friendly, but then when he turns it on, he looks like a threatening guy. You look like you woke a sleeping bear.
I think it's just his brow just naturally hangs at that comfortable, laid back kind of level. Yeah. And it's no, I'm pissed now and lightning bolts are coming out of my eyes.
Yeah, he's got both speeds for sure.
I'm definitely interested in this show. Let's jump over, switch speeds here, because we're going to talk about the season 2 debut of American Crime Story. This is The Assassination of Gianni Versace.
Is this the longest title? Is this Marvel's American Crime Story season 2, The Assassination of Gianni Versace?
Yeah.
Law and Order.
This first episode, It is long, and some one of our listeners commented that it's a little bit slow paced, but the performance by Darren Criss,
yeah, aka the Music Meister for Flash. I went and looked. I'm like, that's where I know this guy from.
I was wondering why I knew his face. That's the crazy kid, right?
He was on Glee.
He was on Glee as well. Wow. That's probably where, like, if you never watched Glee, I'm sure you saw him in so many of their promos everywhere.
Remember, Ryan Murphy is the guy who did Glee. So Ryan Murphy's the guy producing. This is probably where he brought him over from. But yeah, he's phenomenal.
Andrew Cannonan. Yeah, this is... I mean, if Glee was not a breakout role for him, this is like career defining, I think, right here.
That said, his performance is really good. I was bored.
Were you?
Yeah, I was bored, and I was not expecting to be because I love People vs. OJ. I don't know if it's weird to say that this story doesn't have the same resonance because this story is like about gay panic and sex murder, and it should be fascinating, but I was not into it. I it didn't grab me.
I felt the same way. I don't know if – so I waited forever on People versus O.J. Simpson, both because it's peak TV and I have to do extra steps to watch this.
Yeah.
And so I'm probably not going to. But I was wondering watching this episode if binging People versus O.J. helped me with it, maybe get into it. Maybe I didn't notice pacing things that I'm noticing here. Also, I remember and relate to the O.J. trial differently than this crime.
Same. Yeah,
so I wonder if watching the OJ was kind of this watching for discrepancies in what I remember and that kind of stuff, and that's not happening for me here, where I don't know very much about this.
Yeah, I also I remember People vs. OJ. I wasn't super interested in that either. I was like, it's interesting. I'm not sure it's gonna be for me. But I thought that first episode was just killer and just totally dragged me into the world. This did not do that same thing.
The opening sequence was so operatic.
Yeah.
It was the music intentionally so.
Mm-hmm. The constantly lovingly moving camera.
Yeah.
The sort of decadent palace they lived in. Yeah that was really good.
The direction, set design, costuming.
It looked gorgeous.
The cinematography, just like not just the movement of the camera, but just like how everything is staged at all was just so like engrossing for me.
Yeah.
And the tension really built, and it was like about a 7 or 8 minute intro that with him screaming on the beach, and you just kind of expect like, oh, that's where this is building up. Mm-hmm. You can tell by the scene.
Yeah.
I was so like enthralled by that I think I gave this a lot of goodwill for a lot of the slower parts that were happening. That coupled with the performance that Darren Criss was giving, like when he's just this pathological liar to all of his friends, and his weird interactions with who I assume is his sister. I don't believe it was actually stated, but whoever he's living with, the woman and her husband.
And her husband, yeah.
I figure that's his sister who's like...
Who else would possibly be putting up with him like that?
Right. And like him just like creeping on her husband and taking his clothes and lying to everyone. So, I'm just like, I kept going, wait, I have to read more about this. I kept going on Wikipedia, like, what's going on with this story? Whoa, what? And it gets crazier and crazier, like the rest of this guy's background.
Yeah, and that's the thing. For all I know, it's gonna ramp up, but I was not immediately drawn in the way I was with OJ.
Well, like with Penelope Cruz coming in as Donatella Versace, I was kind of like, I mean, she looks great in the part, but the character itself, how she was introduced, it felt so like immediately cold and an already kind of slow plot that and then like just going into a meeting that seemed really boring.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you're kind of killing it here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I like how it looked in the beginning, but
you're going to watch more?
I'm mixed.
Yeah. I'm probably not going to finish this one out.
I watched the first one on FX free trial for the first episode. I would have to jump through some hoops to watch the rest of it. So I know I'm not going to week. So unless there's a huge amount of buzz on this one, like People versus OJ, where I went, wow, should I really watch that?
Yes.
I don't know that I'll go back and binge this whole one. If I find out that like, nah, that turned out to be just a wicked story, I might. Because the performances were great. Watching on that free trial, there was limited commercial, so they didn't actually make me sit through commercials except for at the very start.
Right.
But it kept breaking at the pocket where there would have been and putting up a flat, like a placard that said, we are giving this to you with limited commercial.
Oh, yeah.
And I would have to get up off the couch and just get past it. But doing that made all these little seams where the story kept in these beautifully tense ways, like building up to these climaxes and then like commercial break. But it did it – like by the third one, I went, fuck, how is this not over? Like it kept feeling like this was a great episode that built to credits. Oh, no, we're still going. And the net effect was to make it feel somehow tense and well-paced but also bizarrely long and badly paced.
Yeah, it was a little bit bloated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like I had two episodes of stuff that – I don't know. I wasn't into it.
Over on Netflix, The End of the Fucking World came out, and I hadn't really heard about this. This is another one of those where Netflix doesn't really advertise too much. You might see a poster and go, oh, what's that? And then all of a sudden, drop, new show, and 8 episodes here. And when I realized that it was only 8 episodes and that each one was – I think the first one's like 20 minutes
or
something.
Really quick.
Mm-hmm. It's that first episode is so tight.
Yeah.
And they cut out any potential fat. They kept it just really going at such a click that I was like, yes, I need the next episode immediately.
Yeah.
And yeah. I started this afternoon and I was able to just go right through the entire thing immediately.
You know what I think is interesting? I loved this show. I would have a hell of a time really describing it because it's like, it's Heathers plus True Romance plus Thelma and Louise plus Natural Born Killers.
It's like a modern twisted Bonnie and Clyde in a way. It's a teenage Bonnie and Clyde.
In a way, but it's also like they're not – there's one big crime. But in general, what they're doing is like they're just trying to get away from their – they're two teens who are kind of fucked up by their pasts.
Yeah, two teens that are fucked up by their pasts. One is potentially a serial killer and the other one is – just kind of she's been abused by her parents and
abandoned by one of the other by her other parent. I mean,
yeah. She's just kind of impetuous, hot-headed.
Well, yeah. What I like is we get inside both their heads. This is based on a novel, and it's very novelistic because we get him narrating, and I think at some point doesn't she narrate
as
well?
Yeah, she also narrates.
And I think that was a really good choice. It's a really good device to let them – we get to see what they're thinking. Because they present themselves as something else. One, you know, the lead kid presents himself as sort of this dispassionate, I'm a killer type person. But then we see inside his head, and we see how conflicted he is. And the girl presents herself as this worldly, I think we should have sex and that kind of thing. And then you see that she's really just kind of trying to figure everything out.
She's a lot more insecure than she lets on.
Yeah.
You get these great Arrested Development narrator moments of like,
yeah.
You know, I'm ready to have sex. She's not ready.
But exactly. Then it takes that turn. Is it episode 2 that it takes the big turn where he basically kills someone?
Three.
Is it 3? And like, we don't know where it's going because it's like, he's like, she's like, well, let's go run. She thinks they're in this great romance. And he's like, I might kill her. And then episode 3, it takes a turn and suddenly there is a murder and it's not what he thought it was going to be. And it wasn't what she was expecting. And the whole thing has changed.
I thought it was a very fantastic turn for him.
Yeah.
That like we see this character, this Dexter-esque character, mm-hmm. finally get his first kill and how he reacts to the whole thing from what we've been presented of this character thus far is like the opposite of what we would anticipate.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Watching him realistically grapple with honestly getting that satisfied mm-hmm. and then it not being the thing he thought it was going to be, it is incredibly well handled. But like you were saying earlier, this show is so tight. I mean, I really feel like very rarely I feel like have I seen something that knows its characters this well where I don't feel like there's any question or wiggle room in the writers as to where these people are going or who they are or what they want in any given scene. Like it just moves.
There's no wasted scenes.
Yeah.
Like
I'm so happy with this.
Also, I'm weirded out by the tone of it, the whole thing, because it's darkly comedic,
mm-hmm.
but it is taking itself very seriously. Like, there is no point at which you're invited to laugh at these characters. Like, they do things that are kind of darkly funny, but
you can
laugh
at the situation.
But it is somewhat of a tragedy, and it's sort of real, and it's you were very much invested in these two characters, and where it goes and where it ends is heartbreaking, and yet there's no other way it could have ended.
Did you guys ever see, let me see if this is the movie I think it is, Sightseers?
I was going to bring this up. Sightseers and A Dark Song.
You've seen Sightseers?
Yes, I've seen both those.
And the dad, his dad is also the guy who starred in Sightseers and wrote it.
Oh, I didn't realize he wrote it.
But he didn't write End of the Fucking World.
Ben Wheatley, I think, directs Sightseers.
Okay. Yeah, and, you're right.
And I like his direction. He just did High Rise. He did a couple Doctor Who episodes. Did a Field in England. But yeah, I had to look up the dad. I think it's at the point when the cops show up and he's got the black eye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somehow that was the moment where I recognized that actor.
Me too. I think pretty much the exact same.
And I just watched. There's a movie called A Dark Song that I just made the guys at the UGO podcast watch on Netflix and Kill. And there's only like two actors in it. It's basically a woman hires a guy to help her do a spell, and he's the guy. And shit goes really wrong. But he's one of two actors in that movie I just watched. So I really like that guy.
And that movie, the movie is about this couple. They go on this cross country road trip that takes a deadly turn when they decide to start killing everyone who annoys them.
Yes, Sightseers is a weirdly I found myself really enjoying that movie. Like I got done watching it and went, I don't know who I can recommend this to.
Like, because he is a serial killer who's just kind of been repressing this forever.
Yeah.
He starts killing and then she's just kind of like, okay, I'm on
way
board.
More into it.
Let's
yeah.
do this.
But it's a dark and slow and quiet movie that just kind of gets off the rails.
And tonally, it just really reminded me of this because
yes,
like this has this heavy, somber aspect to it, but occasional like moments of levity and their reaction, their interactions, their kind of voiceovers, and you immediately love these two for all of their flaws, and you end up kind of rooting for them despite probably what we should be.
Yeah, we should be rooting for them to get caught. Yeah,
yeah, but yeah.
It's interesting because I got a little bit of a Tarantino vibe. Not in any, like, the dialogue is not Tarantino-esque. The it's not as stylized the way he does it, but just sort of sort of siding with the bad guys, sort of siding with the damaged characters. I guess it's more Elmore Leonard-esque a little bit too. Although again, it's not goofy like they would do. It's more serious. And also because of the music choice, like the music here is fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. All the music cues I've really enjoyed in Into the Fucking World.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of like this kind of indie acoustic vibe going, but that lends itself to kind of switch in genre occasionally mm-hmm. because sometimes it's like light and fancy and like upbeat. But then I noticed like near the end, that same acoustic turned into like this kind of Western showdown thing, which mm-hmm. was like, oh, okay, this is great how they've just been able to score this entire season with, I'm guessing it was scored by someone playing.
You guys talked about this, that it's just like there's no pacing problems at all here. Like it just moves. But the other thing that really impresses me is it's such dark subject matter, but there's no point at which I was watching this where it felt like a chore or it felt like overwhelming. Like it moves and it keeps you engaged, even though it is doing this sort of darker story.
One of the best tricks they pull off that helps lighten that dark mood but could so easily blow it is the cops.
Yeah.
They are so beautifully established so quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know almost immediately, like, there's something went on between – and then one of them that we should talk about last night. And like, it's all you have to say at that point.
And
like,
it's Asha from – or is her name Asha on the show? Game of Thrones?
Yeah. No, it's something else in the Game of Thrones. But I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just pretty adorable in that role as one of the cops.
But then for as funny a cop buddy cop pair as they are, mm-hmm. when they have their very brief talk about their tension, it gets very serious very quickly, and it's as well handled as anything else on the show.
Mm-hmm. Like both, like it could have been. You're right. How they handled that could have been this like wacky off-tone kind of
I feel like they're there to lighten the mood, but it could have ruined it.
Yeah, but instead you get a well-formed arc for both of them, mm-hmm. and you get a better sense of how they kind of fit into the same narrative.
It also helped me like them being the law coming after these kids. Because there's every reason why. I mean, I know that they're doing what they're supposed to do, and these kids are not doing what these kids are doing wrong. But at the same time, I don't want to see the cops catch them.
Yeah.
And so it was going to be difficult for me to not hate them.
Mm.
And I find myself not hating them because they're silly and they're human. And also when they go to visit her mom and the douchebag that kept hitting on her.
They immediately tagged that douchebag for what he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think one of them's like, you know, I could call child protective services is in England.
Child Protective Services in England.
So I liked them like immediately for stuff like that, where I kind of wanted to hate the cops.
Yeah, and how their relationship kind of comes to that other element of conflict when they're kind of debating how to handle approaching these kids, mm-hmm. and how they both have a good point. And neither I necessarily felt was like way off base or wrong in how they're approaching it. It's just that like one is a little bit more soft-hearted about it, and the other one's like, let's be practical about this. These people are very potentially dangerous.
Yeah, look, they're murderers.
Yeah.
They killed someone. He looks like he might have had a gun in this other scene, so let's actually go and handle this the way we should with our own guns. Yeah. Yeah. Randy, you finished this. Like I'm going to dance around spoilers for the end of this.
Yeah.
But I did want to say that this ends in a particular way that reminded me a little bit of 13 Reasons Why on Netflix as well, because this felt like a show that should just end not only as a season but also a series. It could just be its own thing and complete. But this ends in a way that and could potentially leave it open for a second season.
Really? You think
and,
so?
And I already read that they're considering a second season.
That's weird. I assumed that was the end. I can't imagine them picking it up.
But they could.
I guess.
You have that world established and you have some questions unanswered. So I don't know.
Hmm.
Because it ends with black.
Yeah, but I mean, I thought the implication was pretty clear. I'll be pretty unhappy if it's not.
That's the thing, though, about it, the implication.
Ugh, I'd be really unhappy if they did that, actually. All I'm saying is weird when the spaceship showed up. That's what I thought.
The spaceship in season 3 of Fargo was great, buddy. Yeah,
that's actually true. Season 2.
Season 2. I was about to, yeah.
Alex Lawther. That's the kid.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Kid actors, man. They nailed these two actors. Are great.
Here's the thing about those kids.
How old are they?
She's 25 and he's 22.
Okay, all right.
They just cast people who look like
they look 15 like kids.
Honestly, casting decisions like that are really common, and that's the kind of part of the reason why I have trouble in the first episode of Black Lightning figuring out which daughter's which.
Yeah.
I mean, all the actors are roughly 20-ish.
Yeah.
Just one of you is assigned high school.
But both of them, I thought, looked really young, like to the point where, mm-hmm. like, when she's saying she's like 16 or whatever.
There's no way that kid's not going to check her ID. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's checking her ID. I'm like, check her ID. When she takes off like her shirt and she's in her bra, I'm like, nope. This is uncomfortable, this whole situation here.
Well, and oh my God, shortly after that scene when they have to change clothes, when he puts on the Hawaiian shirt from that point forward, he is McLovin UK. That kid is the British McLovin to me.
He also really reminded me of like the young years of Raising Arizona.
Yes.
Yeah. I love this season, and Netflix just continues to astonish me.
Yeah, just surprised out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. This is an under the radar. Didn't even know y'all were making it. No hype. Which a few years ago I said that we were – television was getting ruined by knowing about things for 2 years in advance on everything. And there's it makes everything have an expectation it can't live up to.
Yeah.
So honestly, I'm kind of applauding the fact that Netflix has figured out a way to just by sheer volume surprise me with, they can't advertise at all. They scheduled these posts like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Like somebody with like Hootsuite at Netflix just scheduling releases.
I know everything that's going to happen in Avengers Infinity War, but I had no idea what was happening in the show as I watch it. And that's nice to have that surprise again.
You know what's weird about Avengers Infinity War is that Spider-Man is actually going to be a serial killer.
He's, oh, my God.
He's gonna stab a dude in like the third episode.
So they read my fan fiction.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah, sweet. This kid's actually they're rebooting Spider-Man again.
Yeah.
This kid's actually the new Spider-Man, and that's going to be season two.
So scrawny. all right, so Jonathan Huffnagel, that should answer your question of another show to binge.
Yeah.
Binge End of the Fucking World on Netflix.
Indeed. It'll take you a day.
It'll take you half a day, yeah. Easy. All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up there. Thank you, Les, and thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Grant.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, and thank you, patrons, as well, for all of your support. And you know what? We're going to be back next week with a lot of great shows to discuss. But until then,
TV Dudes out!
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.